guys, and welcome back to the Huddle Up podcast for KCR Radio at San Diego State. I'm here again with Jake Burton and Nicole Beckelman, and we have lots to break down from the last weekend, so let's get right into it. So we just had Selection Sunday a couple days ago, but before we jump into that, I want to congratulate SDSU men's basketball. Now, Nicole, go ahead and give us the good news.
Woo! We are Mountain West tournament champions, and we are going dancing.
Here we go.
I know it is pretty exciting. I didn't even get to see the last two games because I had to work, and I don't know, I didn't get around to it, but I did see a little bit of the highlights. Matt Mitchell, seeing him take over in the Nevada game was very nice to see, you know, and then everybody just kind of chipped in. It was a great solid game against a very hot Nevada team that was coming into its own. In that one, nice to see that we pulled that out. And then of course, Utah State, finally, they get it done against Utah State, which is awesome to see. Utah State has been a pain in the butt for the last 2 years now, or 3 years, I should say. So yeah, finally, you know, just got over the hump on that one. And everybody contributed in that game. Just great team effort and great momentum going into the tournament here. Haven't had this Mountain West title in a little bit of time. So it's going to have a different feel to it going into the tournament, especially in this bubble atmosphere in Indianapolis for the tournament. So yeah, and they got to bring everything they have against number 11 Syracuse. That is a tough draw for the first round, must say.
Agreed. Syracuse is a really talented guard, Buddy Boeheim. He averages 16.5 points per game. I'm trying to think who on our team is going to guard him. I was thinking maybe Matt Mitchell. I feel like he's always kind of the player to step in, that big defensive player that normally puts a stop to those type of guys. But I feel if our Aztecs are able to put a stop to him, then hopefully we can find, you know, our way to the second round, as that would be very cool for our school.
Yeah, I got to say, I do feel good about the Syracuse matchup, even though Syracuse is a very tough, scrappy, gritty team. And yeah, Buddy Boeheim had a great ACC tournament, had a great game, I think, against Virginia, and they almost pulled that game off. So Syracuse, yeah, they're an 11 seed, but they're a much better team than that number next to them on that seed line indicates. So yeah, definitely not a team that you want to underestimate. Very, very battle-tested, proven team. So yeah, it's going to take everything we have, and I do like our chances in that one, though. I think Matt Mitchell and company will take care of business.
Yeah, Coach Dutcher, in his interview with ESPN, he talked about the Aztecs taking on Syracuse later in this week, and he said that the Aztecs shoot the ball at a really high level, but they don't see that much zone in the conference, so Syracuse is going to be a new challenge for them, and they're preparing well to play against them. But something that I thought is really interesting is when we're going into this tournament, I think another challenge, it's kind of like a mini bubble, because they're going to be quarantined in a hotel room for 3 weeks, only going to practice into the games. So I think the real challenge is going to be, can these college students handle this atmosphere? So what do you guys think about that?
I personally think it's crazy that they're putting college, I mean, I feel like a lot of people forget they're college kids. They're just like us. They're going through classes. They have school. I mean, hopefully their teachers, I'm assuming their teachers are giving them some freedom and leeway right now, because, you know, this is a really important time in their athletic careers. But we also have to remember that they're athletes, you know, they're studying probably in between these games, they're maybe prepping for a test. And on top of that, the only place they can be is their hotel room and the basketball court. So that also has to, you know, do something to their mental health a little bit. It'll be really interesting to see how college kids, you know, handle the bubble atmosphere, as we saw the NBA players kind of handle it in their own way. But then again, I feel that these students, they haven't been in a bubble atmosphere, you know, the rest of the semester, but I hope and assume most of them have been very cautious with the whole COVID protocols, as, you know, if one of them tests positive, then they can't have a game and it's this huge thing. So I don't know if this will be something new for them, or it'll kind of be like their normal daily routine as it's been like past last semester.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be a different kind of daily routine when you talk about, I think it's 6-7 games in 24, 25 days in Indianapolis. So it's going to be a very crazy, very different lifestyle and a different, very different adjustment for these players. But I will say this is where you're going to see, I think, you're going to see a dramatic difference between the experienced teams, the teams with the greater team chemistry and better discipline, and those young teams with big time recruits and maybe not necessarily as much time playing together just overall in their college careers. And San Diego State, I think they might have that advantage. I mean, some of these teams have had this, I mean, especially in the Mountain West, you saw a lot of games where, you know, San Diego State they played Utah State twice. So they were in Utah State for multiple days before they got back home. So they had, they've had minor doses of kind of what it's like to be in the bubble, or just, you know, be on a business trip for an extended period of time. So I don't think this will be too big of an adjustment for them and these experienced teams, but I think for the definitely the more talented, more uber talented, and the younger teams, it's going to be a little bit more difficult for them.
Definitely. And with SDSU going in as the sixth seed, I wanted to ask you guys, do you think that's the proper seed, and what's your opinion on that? Because I know I watched an interview with Coach Dutcher, and he said that he doesn't criticize the seed at all, and that all of the players just really excited to play in this tournament. So do you think that was a proper seeding for them?
Yeah, I do think it's a proper seed. Them coming from, you know, not the Mountain West, not the biggest conference, they weren't undefeated like they were last season. I feel that it's appropriate. I'm happy with it as an Aztec. I think, you know, that's, they were predicted between like 5 and 8. So 6 is right in the middle. I'm happy with it. I think, you know, it's better than being 14th. So we'll take it.
Yeah. I mean, there was a lot of talk about how San Diego State's current seed projection was not consistent at all with how we were steadily rising in the rankings. And then being at 19, still projected as a 7th seed, people were very upset about that. I thought that was actually still even a little bit generous at the time, because we don't have the resume that a lot of these other teams do in front of us. So it's like, okay, you want San Diego State to move up? Who are you necessarily going to put down? And even though these other teams didn't quite have the record of San Diego State, their strength of schedule, the net rating, majority of the stats are going to favor these other teams. And it was just kind of a hard argument to make for San Diego State. But because of the Mountain West, the success we had there and capping off with the title, getting the job done, that just barely pushed us into that sixth seed. So I think that was a generous spot. And I think that was a great spot for us. Unfortunately, we still drew a very good team from a Power 5 conference in 11 seed Syracuse. So we still have our work cut out for us nonetheless. But you do get to avoid being that 8-9 seed and having to face a 1 seed in the second round, or, you know, a tough 9 seed team, you know. So I think that was a big win. I think that's a big reason why San Diego State lucked out. We would have been a 7 seed minimum, it looks like, even if we didn't win the tournament. I didn't know that. I think there was a good chance that maybe we finished as an 8 seed. And then you're not set up very much for a great deep tournament run, because then you have to face a 1 seed in the second round, and the 1 seeds this year are stronger there than they have been in years past. But yeah, getting the 6 seed, I think, is a big win in that regard. Now it's can we capitalize on that? Can we take advantage of being given such a high seed?
Yeah, I mean, the good news is the Aztecs are going to be coming off such high momentum and great synergy from winning the Mountain West tournament. So they're going to definitely have, I would say, a good advantage there coming off with like a very good win this past weekend. And I think, Jake, you mentioned this earlier when we were recording, but SDSU had lost to Utah State twice the past 2 years. So this is definitely a change in the storybook for them to get that dub last weekend. So let's turn it into talk about Selection Sunday now. So two teams that I wanted to bring up, which I thought was extremely shocking, was we don't have Duke or Kentucky in the NCAA tournament this year. Since 1995, that was the last time Duke wasn't in the tournament. So are there any other surprises you guys saw when you saw the bracket come out?
Well, I mean, I don't think I was surprised not seeing Duke or Kentucky in the tournament, but, you know, the fact that it's been, what, 26 years? I mean, I'm kind of excited. Give another team a chance to shine. I'm all for, you know, I think no one can argue that the first seeds like Baylor, Illinois, Michigan, Gonzaga, they deserve the number one seeds. But I think one second team seed that was really interesting is Alabama. They were just right up there with the top four seeds, but no one, you know, the top four seeds are in their spot. Alabama, however, I think is good enough to make the Final Four. They have some, you know, really talented, good players. Herbert Jones and John Petty are like two really effective big guys on the court. They have a lot of depth. The coach is smart. I would not be surprised if we saw Alabama in the Final Four, even though they weren't a first seed.
To me, there wasn't really a ton of surprises. San Diego State, I was specifically monitoring for obvious reasons. Did think they were pretty much a lock for the 7 seed, and it looked like they were kind of leaning towards the bottom of the totem pole of the 7 seeds. But it turns out we actually moved ahead in the committee's eyes. We get the 6 seed. So that was my biggest surprise, actually, believe it or not. And then other than that, not really a ton of surprises. The bubble teams were interesting to watch, especially because now we're going to get Michigan State and UCLA. This is going to be one of the most watched play-in games in the history of college basketball. It's going to be a great game to watch, especially because a lot of people believe Michigan State has what it takes to make a deep Cinderella type run in the tournament. So other than that, not much. I mean, we just had a couple of bid stealers. Mountain West got screwed with Colorado State and Boise State not making it. But you know what? That's what happens when you don't have the resume. Resume really matters in college basketball, especially when you're right at the edge there. So yeah, it didn't work out for the Mountain West. I think as they hoped it would, but yeah, not too many surprises really, especially in those 1, 2, and 3 seeds.
Yeah, I think you mentioned Michigan and how some people are expecting them to. I think you said that Cinderella ending. Their leading scorer, Isaiah Livers, I think he hurt his left foot or like hurt some tendon in his foot. And I think without them, they're much, much more beatable. They're a lot more vulnerable to losing, if you will. And I think personally, that's why I put Alabama in my top four rather than them, because if they don't have him, I think, they're more beatable. I don't have anything else.
Well, yeah, I was talking about Michigan State, 11 seed versus 1 seed Michigan. Okay. Very different teams, obviously.
Very different teams.
But I think you might have looked at my bracket, because I think you might have noticed I don't have Michigan in my Final Four either. I do have Alabama, so I wonder if you stole that from me. I don't know.
I didn't. Haven't made my bracket yet. I was waiting.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, she still looked at mine first.
She wanted to hear your takes first.
Jake, I think we can both agree that we stole this from Jay Billis.
I mean that's just common knowledge. Team's best player goes out and that's a 1 seed. You're not going to hold that 1 seed in the same regard as you do these other championship contenders. So I mean, I was pretty high on Michigan. I don't know if I quite had them making the title game still, but now with no Isaiah Livers and a foot injury, he's more than likely not coming back for the tournament. That's just how foot injuries go. They're usually coming back later rather than sooner. Just, you know, that's the way it works, college, professional, whatever the case is. So assuming he is out for the foreseeable future, I'm not sure Michigan has the horses, just period. I mean, they're well coached under Juwan Howard first year. He's done a great job. I mean, they have tremendous discipline, but I'm not sure they actually have the talent necessary to make that Final Four run. Coaching and discipline is only going to get them so far, I think. And I think they might really struggle once they get to Florida State. And I think that's where I see them heading out.
Let's talk Gonzaga. There we go. I said it right this time. So an interesting stat I saw earlier today was actually for the past two seasons, the Aztecs have gone 53-3, only lost 3 games. And then the Zags have gone 54-2. Very close right there. So that was just something I thought was really cool today. But obviously red hot in college basketball right now, they're 26-0. And some ESPN analysts are actually saying that they're throwing up Steph Curry numbers, which is insane. The team scoring every 14 seconds. Also, I saw someone else say that they're like the Duke of the West Coast, but obviously Duke's not doing very well this season. So do you guys think anyone can beat them in the tourney this year?
No. No, but I would love to
Jake's saying yes. He's shaking his head yes.
I feel like Jake's wrong a lot of the time. He makes these bold statements. So let's
really see. You think I'm wrong?
I like his confidence on his takes though.
What has Jake been right about?
What have I been right about?
The Bucks. Wow. He was right about the Bucks.
I was right about the Bucks.
He wasn't about the Bucks. No, because
I jumped back on the bandwagon. I picked the Bucks in the Super Bowl. I could be completely wrong on them for the entire season. As long as I got the Super Bowl prediction right, I'm a freaking genius. So that's all that matters.
I will give him that one.
I think that's all people care about anyways, is the Super Bowl prediction. They could care less about your season predictions. As long as you get the Super Bowl right, you're a genius.
Okay, Jay, give us your hot take on this one.
All right, so going back and watching Gonzaga. So, well, first of all, let me just start with this. Initially, when I was filling out my brackets, I was like, okay, pretty much every sensible person, or at least if you've listened to a lick of sports talk about college basketball, you are putting Gonzaga as your national champion because you are blindly putting faith into this team and every expert's analysis on this team. Because let's be honest, you probably haven't watched a single game of Gonzaga basketball unless you're a Gonzaga fan or a diehard college basketball fan. Well, I have actually seen a couple games, and I went back and we watched these games, at least the highlights of these games. And I'm not really sold on Gonzaga defensively, to necessarily win. I think they can make the Final Four, but I think with the way their defense currently is, I don't see this team having enough to stop the likes of, these other teams that they could potentially face, like, even Alabama, maybe if that's who they end up facing in the Final Four round. But Baylor is going to be really tough for them. you know, Illinois as well. BYU got him out of position very easily and very quickly. So, and I was really surprised by that. It wasn't just the shooting that was getting it done for BYU, especially early in that West Coast Conference championship game. And I think this is the best team that Gonzaga has had offensively under Mark Few's time as the coach. But in terms of a complete team, it is far from it. And we know you can win college basketball championships with defense and just great three-point shooting and free throw shooting. Gonzaga is not quite that. They're a decent three-point shooting team, and the offense is usually almost always clicking. But, man, it seems like I can't buy into that defense. I don't think that's the makeup. I don't think that's a formula that is going to get them to winning that national championship this year and silencing all the doubters of them playing that Mickey Mouse schedule. That's not even my biggest thing I have on them, is that they play a Mickey Mouse schedule, because we've seen them get to the Final Four. We've seen them get to the national championship before. I do think they have the talent to make it as a Final Four team, but if they make it to the championship, I'm not sure they're going to be able to pull that one out, because I don't know if they can overcome a bad shooting night. We haven't necessarily seen that from them, but they haven't really played on the national stage too many times. And when's the last time we had an undefeated team? That was like since the 70s, I want to say. Maybe
76, and it was Indiana.
Exactly. I mean, I think the pressure, there might be a ton of pressure on them to stay undefeated. And they came back against BYU, obviously, in the West Coast Conference championship game. That was a great sign, but I still came away with more, less that I liked than more that I liked about Gonzaga. So I am not very confident in them. And I just can't see it right now. With the way that defense looks, I can't see it right now.
Who do you have beating them in your bracket?
Well, the team that is playing the best basketball right now, and that is easily far and away, who I think is also the best team in the country, number one seed Illinois. I think they have it all. They've proven they can overcome not having their best player. They're not over-reliant even on their best player, Ayo Dosunmu. That guy averages 20 points per game, but they get it done in other ways too. So, I mean, the game against Michigan where they went on the road without Ayo and they got that win for him, I thought that was a huge game. It was very telling of who Illinois is as a team. The chemistry is there. This is an experienced team. They brought back pretty much everybody from last year. So I don't know. I'm really confident in them, and I'm not sure if there's going to be a team able to beat Illinois, because they just look that good right now.
Jake, did you have any more hot takes?
Any more hot takes? No, not really. I mean, I want to talk about my contenders maybe, for a sec. So really I have how many teams do I have here? About a little under 10, I think, maybe 10. So I have Gonzaga, Baylor, Illinois, Michigan, but that's more assuming that Livers comes back. But I'm guessing he's probably not coming back. So maybe let's take him off this list then. I don't think Michigan can do it without Livers. And then you have Oklahoma State, hottest team, one of the hottest teams in the country, not quite the hottest team. That is Illinois. But Oklahoma State, they came up with an upset win against Baylor. Cade Cunningham has been elevating all of his teammates. He has a great supporting cast. It's not just Cade Cunningham doing everything, but he can certainly lead that team, and because he has that takeover ability in the last couple minutes to get the job done and late in games. So that Oklahoma State, that's going to be a fun team to watch and a very interesting team to watch, because they have what it takes, I think, to get to the Final Four. And then you, of course, Alabama. Literally, they take 3-and-D to the next level. I mean, they almost live and die by the three, but they do have great defense. So, and they do like to get out in transition. They play very fast paced. Alabama is going to be a really fun team to watch as well. I do think West Virginia should be on that list of contenders. I mean, the number two ranked strength of schedule speaks for itself. They've been in a lot of close games that they just weren't quite able to pull out because of a couple lucky shots, almost unguardable shots from other teams, especially Baylor. I beat them in a heartbreaker earlier right before that postseason play started. So the team stats don't quite indicate that this is a championship team, but West Virginia, I think, is a team that you should watch out for. And then Houston, kind of an unpredictable team for me. I mean, sometimes it looks like they have what it takes. Other times the offense isn't quite there. But they're ridiculously lengthy, athletic, and they played suffocating defense. The numbers back it up. And then they have Trayvon Grimes, who's their go-to guy now. The knock on Houston has been over the years that they haven't really had a go-to guy late in games that can get you a bucket, get you that clutch shot that you need. in crunch time. Now they have it in Trayvon Grimes, former five-star. They also have this guy, Marcy. So Houston, kind of a bit of a wild card, but I think they're right there at the bottom of my list of contenders. Not number one by any means, but a team to watch as well.
Jake, in your bracket, the Colorado versus Georgetown, who do you have winning that game?
Can't remember. I mean, I'm kind of like, a lot of people are picking the upset because of Georgetown. They're hot off this Big East tournament win. Nobody saw that coming because they were barely a 500 team going into that tournament. I'm not even sure if their record actually was at 500. They might have been a game below. And then Patrick Ewing, you know, goes viral for saying the security guards don't even know him at Madison Square Garden, and that's his house. He built that house, and then goes on this savage run, wins the Big East out of nowhere, and reclaims Madison Square Garden as his house. And now everybody loves Georgetown. I'm not sure if they're necessarily a shoe-in for that upset, that 12-5 matchup there with Colorado, because Colorado still is a balanced team. So I'm kind of looking more into that. But I guess if I had to lean one way or the other right now, I'd probably say Georgetown just because they're really hot right now.
All right, I'm going to pick Colorado just for the reason that you're going to pick Georgetown.
that's fair
Colorado,
enough.
Colorado, even though they're a 12th seed, you can't count Colorado out. They have, like, a really good point guard, McKinley Wright, super dynamic. You know, he's good defense, good cutter, good shooter. And they're also one of the best free throw teams in the country. I think if they're not the first, they're the second. So, I mean, if they are on the line a lot, then that'll for sure rack them up a lot of points. And I love seeing upsets, so I'm going to root for the underdog.
Also, okay, real quick, I want to talk about some Cinderella teams here. I kind of just have a list. I haven't really gotten around to seeing all these teams. But UConn, a lot of people are talking about them because they have a great big man. Watch out for them. I think they got a tough draw in their region because they're going to have to face Alabama second round, even if they get past Maryland, who's a tough defensive team. So UConn has their work cut out for them, but a lot of people are really high on them anyways. I'm not really sure the bracket favors them, though. Purdue, also tough matchup, getting Baylor in their region. That's going to be very tough for them to make that Cinderella. Or they're not really Cinderella, I guess, since they're a four seed, but they're absolutely under the radar. Not a very talked about four seed right now. So watch out for Purdue. You never know. Syracuse, 11 seed. We saw what they did in the ACC tournament. Very competitive against Virginia. Buddy Boeheim doing his thing. They can shoot, play defense, 2-3, that 2-3 zone, give some teams some issues because you just don't see it very often. So Syracuse, watch out for the Orange. USC, they have Evan Mobley, arguably one of the top three players in the country and one of the top freshmen in the country. He might be able to carry them farther than people think. So USC, a little interesting there. And Oregon as well, really good three-point shooting team. They had some momentum. I think they choked to Oregon State. I want to say they lost to them in the Pac-12 tournament. So they didn't quite get that done. But I do like the makeup of this team. And when their point guard came back, blanking on the name, they're 11-3 with him on the floor. And they have not been great with him off the floor. But I think he is healthy and he's going to be ready to go for the tournament. So I do like how I do like the state of Oregon right now. And I think they have potentially what it takes to make a deep run. They're gonna have to face Iowa. That's the high seed that they're gonna have to face, and I think in the second round. So they're gonna have the work cut out for them as well. But I do think Iowa was the most beatable two seed of the two seeds this year. And then Michigan State, because Tom Izzo, for some reason, somehow, some way, gets his teams playing their best ball in February and March, and this year has been exactly no different. I think they got three top five wins against, three wins against top five teams. All in the Big Ten. The Big Ten is – so they are super battle-tested coming out of the Big Ten, and there's absolutely no expectations on Michigan State really this year, especially being a bubble team nonetheless. But we all see the potential. We all see that when they are on, especially shooting-wise, that they find great success. So Michigan State, that is going to be a very fun team to watch, and they might make some noise and a little bit more noise than you think, and they might just make the Sweet 16.
Jake, can you give us your textbook definition of a Cinderella team? That's what I want to
Cinderella hear. Team, yeah. So I would say pretty much a 7 seed or lower. That's kind of the way I see those teams. A sleeper team is like more just like a 4 seed or lower that people aren't necessarily talking about enough, but might be a contender. Cinderella teams, yeah. I think you have to be a 7 seed or lower to really fit that description because those are the teams that absolutely people do not see coming. But people like to bring up a ton of teams just so they don't leave one off their list, you know. So I tried to rattle off a couple possible names there. But I do think Michigan State, probably the best looking of those Cinderella teams. I just think mostly because of how the bracket shook out and the potential matchups that they would have in front of them.
Awesome. Well, looking forward to watching all of these games coming up soon. We have the first four playing on Thursday and then the first round on Friday. SDSU is playing at 6:40 against the number 11 seed Syracuse. So very excited to watch that game. You can watch on CBS, by the way, in case anyone wanted to know.
Yeah. Definitely go Aztecs. But also, yeah, it's going to be a very weird year not seeing those usual powerhouse teams at the top besides Gonzaga. You know, you talk about Duke, North Carolina not being as dominant this year and then getting an eighth seed. You just don't usually see that too often, but also Kentucky not making the tournament is weird. Arizona has completely fallen off the map. Haven't heard of a good Arizona team quite some time now. And, you know, Virginia, not even quite as dominant. They don't look at like a super strong four seed or a four seed that I feel really super confident about. I mean, people think 13 seed Ohio is going to potentially upset them in the first round. So Virginia, a lot of Virginia slander out there. You know, it's just a weird year for college basketball, you know, with the top dogs aren't at the top this year. And I also can't say that Duke and Kentucky are going to be back because of the, it seems like unlimited amount of options that these five-star players have. I mean, you talk about that new super team G League team that recruits are offered where you get paid, you know, six figures. They might get paid in the low millions. I want to say six figures though. And you get to play with other five-star recruits. You literally just get to promote yourself, your brand, and elevate the other five stars around you. It's a win-win for everybody. I feel like a lot of five stars are going to be choosing that path more and more in the near future. And then also just, you saw Cade Cunningham went to Oklahoma State. I mean, his brother is on the coaching staff there as an assistant coach. I'm sure that had a lot to do with it, but there was also other reasons I'm sure behind that. And five stars just don't feel like anymore that they have to go to the biggest names, the biggest brands, kind of like why Zion picked Duke a couple years ago. They just don't have that pressure anymore. They feel like they can get it done just about anywhere else. I mean, you saw LaMelo Ball did just fine for himself, his draft stock and his brand playing in Australia, professional basketball. So everybody's saying Duke and Kentucky are going to be back. I'm not exactly sure that is going to be the case. There's a very good chance that Duke might not quite get back to being that daunting championship contender year in and year out as we were very accustomed to seeing.
Okay, I want to take a quick turn to the early NFL season. So actually tomorrow is going to be the start of the new season. But right now, I can say this is probably one of the craziest free agency seasons we're going to see. Even some ESPN experts are saying it's one of the strangest NFL offseasons. So free agency is running wild right now. There's tons of movement. We're just going to preview some of that movement right now. I think one of the biggest teams, I don't know if you guys saw this today, but the Patriots, they're out there spending a ton of money, a lot of movement. I don't know if Bill Belichick is just salty that Tom Brady got a ring without him. He's trying to make it back in the game, but that was one of the teams I've been paying close attention to. So what are some interesting movements you guys have seen?
Pulling up these crazy New England signings. So yeah, obviously I'm sure New England fans were a little upset when it started out with Cam Newton being brought back immediately, especially for a much bigger contract this time around. I think, I don't know if it's $14 million like guaranteed for this upcoming season, or if it's an incentive-based contract that he can play up to like last season.
Do you think he deserves that contract?
I mean, it seems like he's been committed to the process, and it was unfortunate it didn't turn out the way it did, but he had a super limited supporting cast around him last season, and New England was one of the few teams willing, maybe the only team willing, to give him that starting opportunity and a chance to compete. So I think he put in the work. I think Bill Belichick liked him. I think he impressed Bill a little bit, and Bill was like, all right, you're willing to put up with the unfortunate circumstances that we had last season. We'll bring you back this year, and we'll give you a much better supporting cast, a much more fair chance this time around, and you'll get a little bit more money doing that as well. So I think Bill Belichick did right by Cam Newton doing that. But yeah, you talk about the moves that the Patriots have made to accommodate Cam Newton and their Super Bowl aspirations here. I mean, signing Jonnu Smith, who's only 25 years old, for 4 years, $50 million. People think he might be a little bit overpaid. I might agree with that, but I think this is a good opportunity to see Jonnu Smith finally in a starting role after playing behind Delanie Walker for all these years. Now he is going to get a chance to shine and be a tight end in Josh McDaniels' system. Patriots love tight ends in those two tight end sets. So, yeah, Jonnu Smith, athletic receiving tight end, had, I think, 8 red zone touchdowns last season. He was big in the red zone. So this guy's a pretty good receiving weapon out there. And then you also – they just brought in – who's the other tight end? Hunter Henry today for a big money, 3 years, $37.5 million. So, yeah, Patriots want to do a lot of 12 personnel, 2 tight end sets. Now you have those 2 tight ends to do that. They didn't quite have that last year, that just the depth in general at that position. And then also spending big money on Matthew Judon. That was a big name in free agency. And he signed very quickly, 4 years, $56 million, 28 years old. So I don't know. It's a lot of money to be giving to a guy that's going to be earning money, big time money, past 30 years old. So it seems like, you know, he's probably only going to make it to 2 or 3 years on that deal. But nonetheless, Patriots trying to be competitive. They spent big on a couple names, you know, Jalen Mills as well. Another guy might have got slightly overpaid, but the Patriots had the cap space to do this. So therefore they're just outbidding like crazy business over these other teams that absolutely wouldn't even bat. These other teams wouldn't even consider giving these guys these type of money. The Patriots said, all right, we're going to give you this money just so you don't even think about signing anywhere else. And that's exactly what happened with these guys. Jalen Mills, solid starting corner, but he's not. He's not at the top of his position by any means, you know? So a lot of those signings. So, but the Patriots are trying to be a totally different team. I mean, 2 wide receivers as well, but they are trying to be a lot more aggressive. I think Bill's a little salty that Brady won without him and did just fine. So now he's trying to get back in the game, show Brady that he still got it, you know, trying to build back up that Bill ego.
One thing I do, if the Patriots suck again and Cam Newton has another crappy season, then that's going to be real embarrassing for him. Good thing it was the 1-year contract.
Yeah, you know what? If it doesn't work out for Cam this year, then it's going to be pretty fair to assume that he likely is not going to get another starting job anywhere else. And I mean, even if he is successful in New England, New England's not even going to be close to a tank team. So I'm sure they would be bringing back Cam, you know, if he does do well, if the shoulder somehow for some reason is much better and much more healthy than it was last season. But if it doesn't work out in New England, it's probably donezo for Cam. I hate to say it, but, and I'm sure his ego is part, he's not going to allow himself to be a backup anywhere else. So yeah, this is kind of it for Cam, and the Patriots trying to put a respectable team around him this time. Wonder if it's going to work out. I don't know. But also, so yeah, the Patriots kind of stole headlines on day one. The team that kind of stole the headlines on today on day two was the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, bring in some interesting names. Shaquille Griffin just paid huge money for him. 3 years, $44.5 million. He's only 25 years old. Considered the top cornerback on the open market. Jaguars did not see that one coming, but I'm sure they gave Shaquille Griffin a little bit more money than other people also were willing to offer. So I'm sure that's kind of what made that deal happen. But nonetheless, Jacksonville Jaguars, also Marvin Jones, a little old, but they gave him still $7.5 million a year for the next 2 years, most of that guaranteed. So they like Marvin Jones, and now they're trying to have a decent team around whoever that next quarterback is going to be, likely Trevor Lawrence, Malcolm Brown as well. They just traded for him, solid defensive tackle from the Saints. So yeah, Jacksonville Jaguars being a little aggressive. Didn't see that one coming.
Makes me sad that Shaquille is leaving my Seahawks.
Yeah, just one more problem for Seattle and the Seahawks. No, just another reason for Russell to want out. Yeah, can't wait to see what Seattle does. If they sign another defensive player before they even try to address the offense, it is going to be a lot more interesting come draft time. These Russell Wilson rumors are only going to heat up a little bit more.
I did see a headline the other day, and apparently the Seahawks have not engaged in any trade talks with other teams. Like, they haven't officially, you know, talked.
Okay, but does that mean Russell Wilson's attitude towards Seattle has changed? Absolutely not. He is still very unhappy, especially seeing top offensive linemen already off the market. You saw Joe Thuney almost immediately sign with the Chiefs, and that the Chiefs were definitely going to be committed to spending on the offensive line. They got that with Joe Thuney, top guard, easily on the market. And then also the Chargers paying big for Corey Linsley, top center on the market. So yeah, Seattle immediately lost on those two. So the draft better be aimed towards offensive linemen now, because I'm not sure what else is out there to bring in right now as a veteran option for Russell Wilson.
One thing I wonder, if the Seahawks don't do anything about their O-line, I feel like Russell's not the type of guy to hold out or have a stupid ego. Like, I wonder what would happen. I wonder if Russ would hold out of practice. He doesn't, I mean, the stuff he says, how he acts, how he presents himself, his character, doesn't seem like the type of person to do that, but he's really unhappy with the organization. I wonder how that will go down within the Seahawks. It'll be interesting. I hope it doesn't go down like that. I hope they get O-line. I hope Russell's happy and help the Seahawks win, of course. That's me thinking with optimism. So,
I mean, yeah, you would think Pete Carroll, you know, he's got to realize at some point, you know, given his age, that winning now with Russell Wilson as his quarterback, no other quarterback, is his best option towards getting another Super Bowl. And if he doesn't understand that, then he's an idiot, because Russell Wilson, it doesn't get that much better than him. There's only a few other guys maybe I'd say are better than him.
If Pete Carroll's like dumb enough to not, you know, you don't have a Hall of Fame quarterback just walking on the streets, you know. Those are rare and hard to find, especially a guy like Russell Wilson with his work ethic, with his leadership. I definitely think Pete Carroll needs to work whatever issues out he has with him and keep him on the team.
Yeah, especially, you know, Russell Wilson, a guy who's been as humble and as silent as he has been about, you know, the team's issues over the past couple of years and their shortcomings in the playoffs. Now that he's finally starting to talk about it, because he's already been paid, he's already well into that contract extension that he signed a couple years ago. I would think that the Seattle Seahawks would have a little bit greater of a sense of urgency to build that offensive line and, you know, add a little bit more maybe to that defense as well, to be in better position to compete in the NFC West and compete for that Super Bowl, because it's going to be very tough next year. So, yeah, Seattle, I'd like to see them make some kind of moves, or else it looks like it's going to be another shortcoming for the Seahawks.
Another shortcoming?
I mean,
making
the playoffs isn't enough with Russell Wilson. Tell me when that's ever been enough.
Okay, well, all these players have that type of ego. Like,
ego. I mean, dude, you have a top three franchise quarterback on your team, and if you're not making it to the conference championship round at minimum every year, I'm going to be disappointed.
That's true. That's a fair
Tom statement. Brady got out last year in the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, exactly. He was disappointed. Bill Belichick was cheap. What did he do? He got out, went to a team that would spend for him. And he won a Super Bowl. So it worked out well for Tom. Tom can only control what he can control. And he did exactly that. And it worked out pretty well for him. So, yeah, do with that what you want.
Yeah, especially in an offseason that is so, like, there's so much quarterback movement. You got to think Pete Carroll's, like, nervous about that. Because, I mean, like, just, I think it was yesterday, we have Tyrod Taylor is now going to the Texans. Obviously, Deshaun Watson's trying to get out. Like, so many quarterbacks are just moving in different places. We're going to see them in different stadiums. So that's got to be just, like, an immediate red flag. Like, why can't we help protect Russ? We need to keep him on our team. Another person that I saw that was really interesting is Andy Dalton is going to play for the Bears. Just throwing it out there, as much as I don't like the Cowboys, I also don't like the Bears. That's just me being a Green Bay fan, of course. So I don't know. I just don't think this is a very good move for Andy Dalton. I don't know if he's going to play well there. Do you have an opinion on that?
Andy Dalton with the Chicago Bears, that is absolutely going to put them over the hump. I got him in the Super Bowl right now. Absolutely, it's going to happen. They're going to get to the Super Bowl with Andy. No, I'm just kidding. No,
Are we the same person here? What's going on?
Andy Dalton doesn't change anything. And the fact that they gave him double figures on a one-year contract makes absolutely no sense to me.
It's like, what are they doing?
Yeah, for a franchise right now whose GM and head coach are fighting for their jobs, or else they're likely going to get canned at the end of the season, this is what you do. I mean, that's the Bears for you. So, yeah, Andy Dalton, I don't know what they're doing. I mean, now you got Nick Foles that you're paying a little bit. You know, you're paying Andy Dalton now in that quarterback room. I mean, the quarterback competition between those two guys is not going to be enough to even keep you, help you make a deep run in the playoffs at all, let alone win the division. You still got to compete with Green Bay. So I don't know what the Chicago Bears are going to do, because they're absolutely screwed having that low draft pick. The best they can do is Mac Jones or Kyle Trask. Or maybe Kellen Mond, if that's who they like, Jamie Newman, whoever else in the draft. But yeah, I don't know. That's a bad situation to be in if you're the Chicago Bears, because you're in win now mode without a franchise quarterback. Absolutely sucks. That's not how you build a team. So yeah, but they brought it on themselves. So I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, maybe they go after Sam Darnold. that's another big domino we have yet to see fall in the offseason. There's still a lot of quarterback movement that's going to take place. I mean, we saw the Saints. Looks like they've settled with Jameis Winston, who I think was the right choice. You know, 1 year, $12 million. But yeah, there's gonna be some other quarterback dominoes that we still have yet to see, especially in the draft. There's gonna be a lot of movement in the draft, I think. So yeah, it's gonna be a very exciting offseason, especially with the way things are starting to shape up right now.
Yeah, no, there's gonna be definitely a lot of movement going on. I actually just looked what was trending on Twitter, and I don't know if you guys saw this today, but Deshaun Watson has been accused for sexual assault, which is so crazy seeing how much he's been in the news for his quarterback talk and all of his movement. But apparently he has been accused for sexually assaulting his masseuse from a while ago, and he's denied all accusations and everything. But that's crazy. I was not expecting that. And I'm
just looking at that now. Wow.
Yeah, he tweeted out, he says, as a result of a social media post by a publicity-seeking plaintiff's lawyer, recently became aware of a lawsuit that's been apparently filed against me. I've not yet seen the complaint, but I know this. I've never treated any woman with anything other than the utmost respect. That's crazy.
Man, it would be a big bummer for his bank account. He just got paid, so.
Yeah. I'm not worried about his bank account. I think he has enough money if he has a lawsuit.
I mean, yeah, I guess so, but. Yeah, that doesn't seem like a very Deshaun thing to happen. So
no.
I wonder how much truth I know, but I mean, the way he carries himself, I'd feel a lot more confident that I win some other players. So that's all I'm going to say. You know, Houston Texans continue to be the Houston Texans, acting like nothing has happened so far. And now they're trying to add pieces to help Deshaun. And these are not quality pieces by any means. And this is not going to, you know, help the outlook of their current 2021 season. So I don't know what Houston is doing. They're literally acting like nothing has happened and everything's fine. They're just getting some pieces now to help compliment Deshaun Watson. And I think the relationship is beyond repairing. So
yeah, they're like trying to save a broken relationship with flowers and chocolate.
Literally, that's just their goal, Houston, right there. Yeah. It's just Houston being Houston. So, but you know, it's funny. I think Deshaun actually has a little bit more leverage now with the draft coming up. There's less and less time for the Texans to find a trade, and specifically a trade partner for Deshaun, because even if those teams that he's approved, you know, those are the teams that he has approved, doesn't necessarily mean those teams are equally mutually interested in him. So, and apparently the 49ers and the Broncos have been added to that list again. So he's got some weird mixed feelings about 49ers and the Broncos, I guess, but now he's back in on them for whatever reason. So yeah, Texans have a decision to make. You trade him, you can get a high pick. You finally get some return on your investment. You know, you don't have to go into the rest of the offseason questioning if Deshaun Watson will ever step back in your facilities again, if he's going to threaten to retire, or he's just willing to sit out for however long it takes. Yeah, I think that's the way to go. Try to trade him to a contender, get what you can for him, and you're guaranteed to get something back for him, you know, versus him retiring. So, you know, who knows?
Okay, well, that's going to wrap up episode 11 of the Huddle Up Pod. We have so much to pay attention to this upcoming week. And I'm just going to start before I exit. Go Aztecs. I'm going to keep throwing in there. Go Aztecs. But after this, you guys can go ahead and follow me on Instagram at mtownsley2wise or on Twitter at Megan Townsley and also LinkedIn, because that's most important.
Go follow me on Instagram and Twitter at NickTimeForSports. Also, I mean, if we're throwing in other social medias, I have a TikTok.
Oh,
Is that the new
priority? What is it? Let us hear it.
It's
just my name. I think I have like five ticks. Like, I don't really post on it, but hey, I'll follow you back.
Okay, Jake, what's your social media? Let us know.
Don't bother. Don't bother looking for my TikTok. Do not use that really at all.
I'm gonna look for it.
Go ahead, follow me on Twitter at JakeBurton419, Instagram too. Trying to send me a question. Make sure you DM me subsequently with that follow request. Be more likely to let you follow me, and I'll answer that question for you on the pod next time we are here. So yeah, good stuff there.
Okay, find Nicole Beckelman, Megan Townsley, and Jake Burton on LinkedIn, and we'll see you guys next week on the pod. Ready, Nicole?
Exit music!